Hello and welcome in.
First Science.
Because he shows them the magic and mystery of science in everyday living.
On Science Mixtape on Soho Radio. Good morning. Oh, what a dreary, cold morning we are having here in London. It is grey and it is wet. Winter has officially come. And so too has Christmas. Apparently it starts mid-November now, because this week John Lewis and all the other big brands unveiled their annual Christmas adverts. This has become almost a tradition, something we look forward to and something which makes us laugh and cry. But why are we so emotionally engaged by these adverts? And do they really encourage us to buy from those brands? Well, joining me today to help answer all these questions is behavioural scientist Patrick Fagan, who is an expert in the field of consumer brain science. As well as his own academic research, Patrick currently teaches a module on psychology of marketing and advertising at Goldsmiths and applies brain science to business challenges for brands such as eBay, Co-op, Save the Children, and even the BBC. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
How are you today?
Not bad, despite the weather. I'm okay.
Brilliant. Well, and coming up, we will be dissecting how adverts play on our emotions, revealing the tricks that make us buy, and conducting an experiment which will measure our emotional responses to the new John Lewis advert. You can join in at home. This is an experiment that Patrick is running, and all you need is access to the internet and some sort of webcam on your computer. We have tweeted the link, so you can get going already, and we'll be doing this halfway through the show. Now, of course, John Lewis isn't the only brand to have an amazing Christmas advert. And for the last couple of years, they've definitely been the ones that everyone's talking about and hands down the best. But this year, there is a contender. Yes, Sainsbury's has come to the fore with Mogg's Christmas Calamity. So we want to know, who has got the best one? Is it Mogg or is it John Lewis, Man on the Moon? For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, where have you been? But this week, John Lewis's advert featured a young girl trying to reach a man on the moon. Now, it's Science Mixtape, and as you know, our guest gets to choose all the music, but we have pulled rank this week and said that the first song is going to be that song that John Lewis has used, Half the World Away by Aurora, a cover of Oasis.
So here I go, I'm still scratching around in the same old hole. My body feels young, but my mind is very old. So what do you say? You can't give me the dreams that are mine anyway. You're half the world away. You're half the world away.
Absolutely beautiful. I mean, if that doesn't bring a tear to your eye, you are made of stone. Patrick, why do you think they chose this song for their advert?
Well, it's very emotional, obviously, as you said. Emotions are key to advertising. A couple of reasons. First of all, emotions get us to pay attention to an advert. So No matter what you want to do with an advert, if you want to get people to remember a message or, you know, simply to buy a product, if people don't pay attention to it, then it's essentially worthless. And by the same token, emotions help us remember things more as well. And so again, if we don't remember an advert, then it's not going to work. Emotional songs like this, they really tie in with the sort of concrete so-called monkey brain that we all have, which is much more effective at influencing our behaviour.
What do you mean when you talk about our monkey brain?
So there's a theory, it's kind of outdated, but it's been backed up more recently by neuroscientific research. But there's a theory that our brains have evolved over time, and as we've evolved from species to species, ancestor to ancestor, different regions of the brain have evolved as well. So if you think, if you were to cut the rock of the earth in half, you could see different layers, sediment, granite, and so on. Same way with the brain, if you bisect it, you see different layers where it's evolved over time. So at the bottom, the base, so sort of the brain stem and the cerebellum, is what's known as the reptilian brain. So it's all about you know, reacting very fast to things.
Controls like our breathing and our movement and things. Yeah.
Exactly. So if a wasp comes at your face, you'll get out of the way. And then around that is the so-called mammalian brain, to do with emotion and social learning and things like
that. So is that where like our amygdala and our fear center are and things?
Yeah, you don't need me here today.
Absolutely. Keep going.
And then around that is the so-called human brain, which is the cerebral cortex. It's a really sort of wrinkled bit. And actually it being so wrinkled is what makes us human, because we can pack so much surface area within a small volume, which means we have more brain to the pound, so to speak. So that means that we can be more intelligent than other animals. But the key point is that the older regions, by virtue of survival of the fittest and having helped us survive as a species, they're actually more influential than the newer regions. So for example, as I said before, if a wasp comes towards your face, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to rationally stop yourself from doing that, because it's a very embedded instinctive response. By the same token, it's very difficult to rationally overcome your emotional processes.
Right, so they're appealing to our emotional brain. And in what ways can they do that?
Music is one, is a very effective one. There are also cute things. There was one study which found that if you show people pictures of cute baby animals, they'll be much more attentive afterwards. So they found this by getting people to play the game Operation, where you pick bits out of... So they found that... they used that as a sort of proxy for being attentive and paying attention. And they found that people who saw the cute baby animals, not only did they spend longer on the game, but they were much better at it. So the conclusion being that these baby animals make you more attentive and careful. And the idea is that it's an evolutionary thing, that we need to be more attentive and careful when we have a baby that needs our care, because otherwise, you know, being eaten by a dingo or whatever. So there's that, there's cuteness.
Maybe that explains why cats on YouTube are just so successful.
Exactly. Yep. And babies as well, of course. So Evian baby advert, extremely successful. Outside of music videos, the most popular...
Oh, hello. There was a fire engine going by. All the action happening down here in Soho this morning. Fire engines. Back to babies.
Yep. Well, surprise is another thing that gets our attention as well. So, and contrast. Interestingly, I did a very crude analysis and found that there's a very strong correlation between Michael Bay's box office receipts for his films and the number of explosions that are in those films. So we're hardwired to pay attention to basically noise and movement.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, because a big loud bang suggests danger and you need to pay attention to it to save yourself.
There's even a theory that we're addicted to noise and movement, and that's why the internet is such a problem, because we're just...
It feeds that with the kind of possibility to have loads of tabs and short attention span.
Yeah.
And you're flicking between videos.
Exactly.
Ah.
So lots of things, as well. Fear and disgust and all sorts of things.
Now, I'm interested that you've said fear, because I've actually read a kind of criticism of John Lewis's advert this year, saying that it's trying to be heartwarming, it's trying to be nostalgic. It's about this, you know, little girl who sees the man on the moon and he's lonely and he has no one to share Christmas with. And, you know, they say that this advert was to raise awareness for AGE, which is a charity about helping people who are lonely and old. And he said in his article, actually, it's just commodifying our deeper fears, worries and anxieties and wrapping them back up and selling them to us, saying that we're all terrified of being alone at Christmas. And John Lewis is saying the way to not be alone is to show someone you love them by giving them a present.
Yeah. And so I guess one thing to say about that is, even though our monkey brains are very persuasive and influential, consumers are still not stupid, and they tend to be very skeptical of things. And if they are skeptical of something, then suddenly that thing becomes a lot less persuasive. So I think it's very obvious what John Lewis are doing with this advert, that they're trying to use our guilt and fear and so on, that we don't talk to our older relatives as much as we should. And maybe that will get people's backs up and actually have opposite effects. Only time will tell, I suppose. But there's research to show that Any emotion is good in an advert, as long as it's activating, so that's exciting. But if it's depressing, so not activating, then it's bad. So what you need to do is arouse people's physiological systems. So disgust is fine, anger is fine, but things like sadness you should actually avoid. So it's questionable whether the John Lewis advert this year will do that well.
Well, looking at the stats so far, I mean, maybe it was anticipation, but they received 23,000 social mentions in only 2 hours after their YouTube release. And if you compare that to last year's advert, Monty the Penguin, that had only 14,000 in 24 hours. So at the moment, they're getting that traction. They're getting people talking about them. Now, they're not actually selling a product. So how important is it just to kind of generate awareness?
Absolutely, extremely important. There's a sort of theory of marketing that I subscribe to. As far as I can tell, it's only evidence-based theory by a chap called Byron Sharp at a institute called the Ehrenberg-based Institute for Marketing Science. Anyway, the idea is that advertising only works by generating what's called mental availability, so sort of taking up mental real estate in people's minds, so being as mentally salient and memorable and so on as possible. And why that's important is because people are lazy and they don't really have a lot of rational sort of brain resources for when making decisions. Contrary to what most people believe, they don't sort of stand around going, well, that shop's 20 minutes away, but if I go there, I'll save £3. They don't make these calculations. It's much more emotional and simple than that. And so a huge factor that plays into whether someone will go to a shop like John Lewis or not is whether they remember it, or whether they notice it because it's in their heads from an advert, or whether they recognise it and so on.
Amazing. So if we just unpack it a little bit more, what are the techniques, the basic techniques that they're using? We've already said they're using an emotional song and they're slightly playing to our fear. And what other techniques are they using or not using that other adverts might be to engage us?
They're using narrative, which is very, a very powerful principle in advertising. I don't think they're using it as strongly as they have done in previous years and as strongly as the Sainsbury's advert you mentioned are using. What's interesting is a company I work with called CrowdEmotion does, as you mentioned, measures people's facial expressions to measure their emotions in response to adverts and TV shows and so on. And we did a study on the John Lewis Monty the Penguin advert compared to another advert. And what we found with the Monty the Penguin advert is really interesting in that there was an arc of engagement from beginning to end. So there was a story from the start to the end, which engaged people. But not only that, though, there were that arc was comprised of little sort of spikes of engagement throughout as well. So that entire story was made up of little vignettes. So I don't know if you remember, but the kid was building Lego with the penguin, and he was on the bus with the penguin, and he was sledding with the penguin.
Yeah, kind of little action sequences.
Yeah, whereas this, the ad this year, that seems to be missing. It's just one story about this girl and that chap on the moon. But it seems to be missing these sort of vignettes, that these spikes that need to grab people's attention, because people have very short attention spans.
They're also one thing that I loved when I read about this was they put a bench on the moon, which is quite absurdist, but they've done it because it's universal and everyone recognises that bench as a sort of parkside, roadside, and to see an old person sitting on a bench is a really common thing. So straight away you're thinking of someone else in your mind that you recognise in that position. So it's kind of personalising it a little bit by being so universal. You can put your own personal touches to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the chap I talked about earlier, Byron Sharp, refreshing memory structures, as he calls it, which is reminding people of the brand, there's also building memory structures. So if you think of memory as kind of a web of connected things, like a chair might be connected to a table connected to a dinner plate, what have you. A brand wants to sort of build memory structures like that. So if we take Coca-Cola as an example, they had that polar bear advert a while back. So what that advert seemingly did was connect the idea of Coca-Cola with ice, so it's ice cold, also with the idea of these polar bears together, so sort of friendliness and family. So what adverts really need to do is hijack existing memories and slot the brand in there so that people are reminded by those things.
When then it's kind of sick two ways, so then when they think of the memory they think of the brand.
Exactly, yeah.
Ah, amazing. We need to fit in some more music, so we will be coming back to this topic afterwards, but what song would you like next?
Some Manic Street Preachers would be good.
And why have you chosen this one?
Because it goes back to my young punk days where I was anti-capitalist, and now I'm in marketing. it's a song about sort of against the consumer culture.
This is Love Sweet Exile by Manic Street Preachers. You are back and listening to Science Mixtape, and we are back to the science of advertising. Patrick, a couple of years ago, wrote an article, 8 Reasons Why We Buy at Christmas, and a lot of these are actually why we buy at all. So, Patrick, could you take us through these? What is happening? What is persuading us to buy?
Oh, gosh, it was 2 years. I can't remember all of the reasons, but I'll try my best. So, to start with, as I was saying, we're very lazy. So, to give you an example, one study found that it looked at people in London Underground, and if the escalators are available, can you guess what proportion of people will walk up the stairs?
Oh, God, it's going to be really small, isn't it? I'm going to go for 17%.
It was 8% of people.
Whoa, even less?
Yeah, exactly. So we're just, from an evolutionary perspective, it makes sense that we preserve our energy and our, you know, cognitive resources for when they're needed most. But
did that include if you walked up the escalator, like a halfway house?
I don't know. Possibly. Yeah, maybe that would take it 17%. I don't know. So evolutionary, you know, we need to conserve our energy, but now these days we just end up, you know, fat couch potatoes. But anyway, so we're lazy, and also we have limited cognitive resources. So one study, by a chap called Timothy Wilson, he did his best to try and quantify the conscious versus the non-conscious, which is a very difficult, if not impossible, thing to do, especially because the two aren't actually separated like people
think.
When you
say quantify the conscious with the unconscious,
yeah,
what do you mean?
So what he did was he looked at neuroscientific research, and he basically counted how many neurons are associated with the 5 senses. You know what the 5 senses are.
Yeah.
But then he also looked at how many of those were associated with conscious processes. So he found that every second we're processing 11 million bits of sensory information, or 11 million neurons are firing, but only 40 of those are conscious. So 40 out of 11 million bits.
So it's kind of how we filter and what we choose to pay attention to and things.
Exactly, yeah. We only pay, according to that figure, which again, it's an estimate, one of the best estimates we have, but it's still an estimate. We only pay attention consciously to something like 0.0004% of things. The highest figure has been 30%. But the overall finding is the majority of stuff is just non-conscious. We just have no idea about it. And one of the implications of that is we just do not have the resources or even the motivation as well to consciously and carefully think things through. So that makes us vulnerable to what are called heuristics, rules of thumb.
Mm-hmm.
So one of these very famous example is if you think of a learner driver, when they start learning to drive, if they see a red light, they have to think very hard about what to do, and they have to do mirror signal maneuver and put their foot on the brake. It's a very complex response. Over time, that becomes learned, and automatic, and so basically red equals stop becomes a rule of thumb or a heuristic.
Mm-hmm.
And so these rules of thumb influence what we buy and other decisions. So one such thing in a consumer context is something called social proof. So famous researcher Stanley Milgram, who did the shock experiments, also did an experiment where he got people, actors, in a New York street just to, on command, they would all stop and look up at a window where nothing was happening and just stare at the window for a minute. And what he found was that passers-by would join in and look up as well, even though there was nothing there.
I mean, I think I definitely would. If I saw loads of people looking at something, I'd be like, what are they looking at?
Yeah, exactly.
And then I'd be like, oh, I can't see anything. And I'd probably feel like I was the one at fault.
Yeah, so exactly. So we're kind of sheeple in that sense that we...
Oh, I love it.
We tend to follow the crowd. Another great example you might love, you may have heard of it, is the Ash experiment. So this experimenter got a small group of people together to do an exercise where they were shown four lines
mm-hmm.
of different length, and they had to say which line was the smallest. But the thing is, out of the group of four, only one was an actual participant and the other three were actors that were told to all say the same thing, which was the wrong answer. Four lines were shown and A was the shortest, and all the actors would say C, 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 and it got to the participant and he'd be like, yep, C.
Really?
Actually, I've got a really funny story about this. My brother is like doing psychology AS level, and the teacher was like, oh, Amir, go, the head teacher wants to speak to you. So he's like, oh my god. Then he goes and she like, no, she doesn't. And he comes back, and everyone, and she's like, oh, okay, sorry, I must have been mistaken. And everyone's like looking at these lines. So I think she briefed the entire class while my brother was out. And then she's like, okay, which line's longer? And then he's just like really confused, and everyone's like picking the wrong line. And then his friend is like, oh, wait, no, it's not the obvious one, obviously. And then he's like, okay. And then just puts his hand up with everyone else along. And then the teacher's like, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is why we all follow each other.
The sheeple effect. And,
exactly.
And you can see Amazon have been cashing in on this for years, because they, when you're looking at a product, it's like, other people who looked at this also looked at this. The people who bought this also bought this.
That's it in action. So that's heuristics, and probably one of the biggest at Christmas is one called reciprocity. So we're social animals, and we tend, if somebody does something for us, we feel a very intense pressure to sort of return the favor. Primatologists, or as I call them, monkeyologists, did a study looking at back scratching among primates, and they found that a far greater percentage of who scratched whose back was predicted by reciprocity rather than being related to one another. So as I like to say, I'll scratch your back if you'll scratch mine is more important than being a monkey's uncle. So reciprocity is very powerful. And one experiment a researcher did was he got a phone book, just picked people out at random. He didn't know them at all. And he'd send them cards, Christmas cards. Excuse me. And he didn't know these people. And I think it was, I can't remember now, but I think it was 3/4 of people sent a card back, even though they didn't know him.
Wow.
So we feel this intense pressure to reciprocate. And I think that's probably a huge driver of why we buy this stuff at Christmas that nobody really wants sometimes.
Because you know that you're going to be given a present, so you've got to be prepared to give a present back.
Exactly, yeah.
Ah, crazy. And you've done some quite interesting research into sort of price framing and personalization as well, in terms of kind of encouraging us to buy things.
So there's, I suppose there's two things there. I mean, price framing is a huge business. There's all sorts of cool things you can do to prices. Just to give you an example, if you put what the old price used to be and what the new price is, if you put the old price in a big font and the new price in a small font, people will perceive the new price to be literally smaller because it's in a smaller font, and they'll be more likely to buy.
Even if it's actually a higher price? No, or it is a lower price.
It's a lower price, yeah, but just the fact that it's written in a smaller
makes
font
them think it's a bigger difference.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, which is fascinating. Other things, if you write a discount on a yellow label, people perceive it to be better because we associate yellow labels with price discounts. And there's one theory, actually, that promotions don't work because they offer a discount, because, like I said, we're lazy and we don't think things through rationally. So if we see a discount, you know, very often we don't think about rationally the benefit. But the theory is that they work because they draw our attention to the product. So it's literally just the fact of having this sign. So I don't know if you've seen in... am I allowed to talk about specific brands?
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about John Lewis all show. Go for it.
In Tesco's, you can see they have yellow signs with the price on, and it says special purchase.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything. It's just a way of drawing our attention to the product.
Oh my God, that's so clever.
Yeah.
It's not like a discount for a limited of time. Because that is something as well, isn't it? Scarcity, or being made to think that if you don't buy it now, it'll be gone, or that price will be gone. That's something that encourages us too.
Yeah, absolutely. So scarcity is a big one. If you give people a cookie jar and there's only two or three left rather than a full cookie jar, which has scarcity, people think the cookie tastes nicer.
I guess that's a sheep pill effect as well, isn't it? Everyone else has eaten those cookies.
True, yeah.
All absolutely interlinked. Oh, crazy.
As you say, personalization as well is a big thing. So personalization of prices is becoming much, much more possible thanks to technology and so on. And that, as you can say, it could use scarcity. So it could say, buy this product, it's on a 50% discount, but only for the next 30 seconds, which induces scarcity, which is something which wasn't possible, you know, not too long ago.
Absolutely. So, to recap, we are buying for reciprocity. We are buying because we are primed socially to follow what everyone else is doing. We buy because there are discounts, because we think the price is good, because we have been emotionally engaged. And even I saw something that said the mood that you're in will affect your likelihood to purchase too.
Yeah, absolutely. The mood is related to purchasing. So, yep, there was that study which used Twitter data to relate, I think, the mood of a country to the stock market, I think. And it found that the stock market was more positive when people were in better moods. Similarly, stock market's better on sunny days and sales are up on sunny days. So, yes, mood is a big driver. And interestingly, if we see a promotion that we think is good, that puts us in a good mood as well. So it kind of has
I guess it's like, I found a bargain.
Yeah,
woo-hoo!
Exactly.
Got it. No one else has. Amazing. It's time for another song.
Another sort of advertising consumer society one, I think. I can't get no satisfaction.
We're always wanting more.
Exactly.
Patrick, your special experiment, which will measure our emotional responses to the new John Lewis advert. Could you just tell us why you're doing this, what you're looking for?
Sure. So, excuse me. There's a chap called Paul Ekman who carried on the work of Charles Darwin, and Darwin found that human beings have expressions, and these expressions sort of carry on from our ancestors. And so Ekman identified six universal facial expressions across all people.
Happiness, sadness, fear, disgust, anger, and I forget the sixth.
Surprise.
Surprise.
Yeah. Yes, so Ekman found that these are universal across ages and countries. There's slight differences, but they're basically universal. And so what our technology does is, via your webcam, it can look at the shadows on your face, and from the changes in shadows, It can see how the muscles in your face are moving, and those different muscles are associated with different facial expressions. So it can see, for example, if you raise your eyebrows, that might be linked with surprise if other things are happening in your face as well. So the technology does that, measures your facial expressions, so it can tell what your emotional response to the stimulus, in this case the John Lewis advert, will be.
Great. Let's give it a go. You can join in at home. We have tweeted the link, so you can get going already, and we are going to get producer Amina to watch it. But it's really fun. We've got through to so you click on the link that we've tweeted, and then you have to allow your webcam. And so my webcam's now been enabled, and I can see my face on the screen talking into the microphone, and I've got this great kind of like drawing. It's captured where my mouth is, and it's just kind of got lines for my lips, my nose, my eyes, my eyebrows, and my general face shape. And as I'm speaking, or as my eyebrows go up, it's recognizing this. And then there's a little display for some of the emotions. So it's saying I'm pretty happy at the moment, because I guess I'm smiling quite a lot as I speak. And my surprise keeps kind of jumping up and down as well as my eyebrows are being raised. So I'm going to hand this over to producer Amna. She's going to get set up with her face and going to start watching that advert we've all been talking about. Now, Patrick,
yep.
And how many people have you done this with so far? Have you got any preliminary data?
For the John Lewis advert?
No, just...
Just in general? Tens of thousands of people. Maybe we're getting to hundreds of thousands now. So we're building up a big database, yeah, because it's important to have norms, because we need to understand what a normal disgust looks like, for example, mm-hmm. for a retailer ad versus an insurance ad, so we can sort of understand if an advert does well or not. We're getting lots of people through, which is great.
And what do you see happening to this technology? Or like, why are you kind of doing these experiments?
The potential is absolutely amazing. So many cool things. So at the minute, it tends to be sort of marketing and to be frank, gimmicks. So for example, we've done something which is, you know, not to belittle it, it's very, very cool, but we've done something with a music brand where you watch a clip of music videos with a clip for each genre, and it tells you which is your favorite kind of music from your emotional reaction to the videos, which... And then that information can then be used to sort of create a playlist for you. Or if you're in a certain mood on a certain day, it can tell that from your face and play the right music. So that's really cool. But that's kind of, you know, gimmicky marketing kind of stuff. But the future applications are amazing. So there's health. So it can detect if you're depressed or if you have a risk of depression.
Of course.
There's security, so it can see if people are, you know, looking angry or about to do something. You can also tell people's personalities from their faces. So there's something called the dark triad, which is Machiavellianism, psychopathy, and narcissism. And one study found that you can tell if people have these traits from the shape of their face. So narcissists tend to be more attractive, for example. So it sounds very...
It must be hard to love yourself if you didn't think you were attractive.
good point, yeah. It sounds a bit creepy and invasive, and I guess it is, and I think with this sort of data and technology, you do need to be very, very careful. But you could use it to see if someone is potentially a threat in a certain situation. Yeah, I won't go on and on.
The thing that immediately sprang into my mind when you mentioned it was I'd read a few years ago about Xbox putting in a patent to develop, I think it's called Kinect or something like that, where when you're watching your TV, it will be monitoring your facial expressions and seeing how you react to programs and adverts as well through the Xbox.
So we've been working with one brand to sort of, again, it's kind of gimmicky in marketing, but... if you smile, you get a free token, so for a coffee. So something like that would be great for a brand like Coke, whose brand value is joy or happiness, because you can mentally associate the idea of smiling with the brand. In terms of content, again, as you say, amazing applications for sort of branching content. So if... give you an example, I used to love The Sopranos. I don't know if you watched it, but it was my favourite show. I watched it all the time until it got to one episode where one of the characters was being interviewed by I think the FBI or something, and she was sick, and I could tell from her being sick, I could see what was going to happen. I could tell that she was going to inform on the family, and then that she was going to be killed, and then that her boyfriend was going to lose it, and I was very sad and upset about what I could see was going to happen. So maybe this technology could see my reaction to that event and see that I wouldn't like that, and it could give me a different ending to the TV show.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's almost like a kind of virtual reality world in a different sense.
It's spooky, but it's fun, I think.
Yeah. Crazy to think about. Now, producer Amna has finished her experience. How was it?
Oh, God. I don't think I've, like, watched the whole ad completely through. It's so harrowing. Like, like the last scene is just, like, this tear. It makes me so sad. Because I just, like, think I'm really excited about Christmas. It's just, like, that scene where she's having, like, so much fun. And then it just cuts to him, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like happens to tens of thousands of people, and I've not really thought about it, and I feel really bad and sad. I loved it.
Well, let's see what your results were. Now, we're going to get Patrick to explain these to us. On the screen, we can see a graph monitoring four emotions, and happy, surprised, angry, and sad, and lots of spikes.
Yeah, so just to say, just to give a little note up front, this is because we've generated the results immediately, we've used a sort of pared down version of the technology. To use what we usually use takes longer. So we've used the pared down one, which is slightly less accurate and which uses only four emotions. So just to get that out of the way. Looking at the results, so first of all, we have this grid on the left, which shows that yes, indeed, you did love it. So not only did you give it a very high conscious rating, you said explicitly that you liked it, but also you've had a very high emotional engagement with the advert. So perhaps I'm wrong, perhaps this advert will do really well because people like it. And they also are sort of noticing it and remembering it, which is good. Sometimes you'll see people might say they like it, but actually they don't emotionally engage with it. So we found that with a Lego clip, for example, and that's probably because everyone loves Lego, so they're going to say, yes, I liked it. But actually the clip wasn't that great.
What I'm struck by looking at this graph is actually all four of these emotions are kind of going up and down all the time. Would you say that's what you need in a successful emotional advert? You need to be constantly engaging these different emotions over and over again.
That's a good point. It could be here, it could be noisy because we're not exactly in a controlled environment. But then again, when people are at home watching an advert, nobody is. I would say that's a good point. Engaging as much emotion as possible is definitely a good thing because it will get people noticing and remembering the ad. So I guess thinking about this one, although it does have fear and sadness, as we talked about, it does have moments of happiness. And it does have moments of surprise, like a person on the moon, living on the moon, is surprising.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, we have tweeted the link again. So if you want to see what your reactions are, go ahead, find yourself a computer with a video camera and get your results. And you can send us in. Was it right for you? We're going to go straight away to another song and then finish up with a tiny bit of science news, squeezing it in at the end. Yes, we're running out of time. What do you want next?
Surprise me.
Okay, we're gonna go for Are You Gonna Be My Girl by
Yes,
Jet,
good choice,
which was used in the Coca-Cola advert,
in the iPod advert.
iPod advert, there we go.
Said, are you gonna be my girl?
Science.
News. Squeezing it in at the end of the show. Patrick, what science news have you brought with you today?
Well, I saw recently that Topshop are releasing a range of accessories that have Barclaycard contactless payment chips in. And in fact, I was walking through WH Smith's and I was surprised to see a sort of Barclaycard stool, and they're selling wristbands with contactless payment chips in. And for me, this is going to put my tinfoil conspiracy theory hat on here for a minute, but it sort of seems to be going towards the direction of having, you know, chips implanted in us, and we pay with everything for them, and talking about, you know, we can measure people's emotions, see if they're psychopaths or not through their faces, and then with these chips we can see everything they've bought and everywhere they've been, and there are companies now that can predict all sorts of stuff from this data. So there's one company that sees what you like on Facebook. So for example, if you like Big Mama's House, you're more likely to use drugs. If you like Colbert Report, you're more likely to be intelligent. All these creepy things they can predict. And so I think when we're all implanted with these chips, it's going to be a very scary, different future.
Oh my God, absolutely. I mean, just they're going to take that data revolution up another level. Google is going to know everything, literally everything, not just what you buy online. And I guess having like paying just for like a wristband, you can almost feel like a bionic human, just like paying with your skin or something.
And and then obviously with the tragic events yesterday in France, building up in the last few weeks, politicians have been saying, you know, we need to pass a snooper's charter to protect us from ISIS. Now something's happened with ISIS, and so the government's going to have
all of this kind of
data, complete access to it. Very spooky.
And yet, on the other hand, that was exactly what the villains were doing in Spectre.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, from one to another. In other news, the Victoria's Secret perfume is an excellent excellent mosquito repellent.
I know, it's really, really funny. This study researchers did, looking at what's the best repellent for mosquitoes. And, like, there's the standard one that it's called Deed, and it's used in loads of things. But they also found Victoria's Secret Bombshell perfume was really great at keeping mosquitoes away from you. So if you're thinking of getting someone that for Christmas, it's 2 for 1.
Brilliant. Combine it with a nice exotic holiday. And also Darwin's book on evolution has been voted the most influential academic text in history. Mm. Probably not that surprising. Yeah. It really has changed the way we think. And we were talking about evolutionarily psychology of the mammalian brain. I mean, all of that completely influenced by Darwin. Now, we asked you at the top of the show, which advert do you prefer? Mog with Sainsbury's, Christmas is for sharing, or Man on the Moon from John Lewis? And producer Amna, what are people saying?
I think it's Mog's one, from what I can tell. They're all wrong, because the John Lewis one is clearly better. But I think Emily kind of summarised it. She said that she likes the humour a lot more than just overload of sentimentality from John Lewis, and you kind of walk away feeling really sad, which you don't with the Sainsbury's one.
That's true. And it's also got a cute animal, which you said is something that we really pay attention to.
Exactly.
Cat.
Yeah. And it's got those peaks of narrative as well, I think.
Yeah. So what would you say was the better one? What we're going to have the expert's opinion here.
I think Mog's probably this year, because, as you say, it's got the cute animal, and cute animals dominating so all the time. So compare the market, they completely dominated the market. They sort of tripled their market share in, I don't know, a week with that little meerkat. All sorts of brands are using the what I like to call pug power, and I think pug power is going to win out with these ads in Mog's this year.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to look at the revenues this time next year for Sainsbury's versus John Lewis. Any other tweets that you want to mention?
Matt did try the crowd emotion. It was quite funny because his initial results was that it needs work. Doesn't seem to be very impressed by it.
There we go. So maybe Matt has a heart of stone and was not moved by the John Lewis advert. Shout out to Matt. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us today. It has
thank
been
you.
Absolutely fascinating. I could talk to you for another 2 hours. Really, really, I could. All that is left is for you to choose your final song. What are we going to be playing out on?
Can we go, please, with Flatbeat by Mr. Wazzo, which I remember very clearly from the Levi's adverts all these years later.
Brilliant. Your final song. Thank you. Thank you. My fascinating science mixtape.
He's a real jerky.